From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudette. Cities and counties throughout the United States are considering reinstating mask mandates as COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations continue to rise. Joining us today to talk more and to also answer your questions is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force. Remember, if you have a question, do get it to us. You can email us right now, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Pate.
Thank you, Gemma.
Okay, Dr. Pate, let's talk about what's going on in terms of potentially reinstating mask mandates. We know that officials in LA County, which is where Los Angeles is, and then King County in Washington State, and that's where Seattle is, these officials are saying that they are having serious discussions about reinstating mask mandates. One official in Los Angeles said she wants to make it very clear they're not saying they're going to close anything down again. I mean, nothing like that. That life will go on. It's just that if you are indoors and with people and in public, they may need to reinstate a mask mandate so they can get their levels back down, since both of these counties are in this high rate of transmission per the CDC guidelines. I am assuming, Dr. Pate, you are not surprised by this.
No, I'm not. And there'll be discussions about this in different parts of the country. I doubt this will be a discussion here in Idaho, but it will be a discussion in various parts of the country as we deal with very high levels of transmission, including as we are approaching the beginning of a new school year. So again, I'm not sure that Idaho schools are going to do much to try to contain the spread of this disease, but certainly many schools are going to have to think about what steps are they going to take. And as you and I have talked about, Gemma, many times, you know, the unfortunate thing about masks is so many people assume that if we put in a mask mandate, then that meant you have to wear masks for the rest of your lives. And of course, nobody intended that. What really would be a rational approach is if we tied our mitigations to the level of disease activity. In other words, when we have very low disease transmission, you can be much more liberal with your activities and may not need to wear a mask except under very particular conditions. But when we have very high levels of transmission, really, it's a little foolish not to take steps to protect getting the infection, especially because people are getting reinfected and we don't know the long-term health consequences of that.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit more in depth about school, as you mentioned, because the Boise School District is 2.5 weeks out from starting school, August 15th, August 16th. That includes all schools within the Boise School District, some private schools as well that follow the Boise School District's calendar. And, you know, Dr. Pate, you and I have discussed this before. I have an incoming ninth grader. I cannot get him to wear a mask anymore. It doesn't matter. It is not going to happen. With that said, I am not the only parent in that situation. We are sending our kids back to school. I'm curious as to, as you mentioned, what school districts are going to do or what plans that they need to have to mitigate this, because are kids just going to go to school with COVID positive? Are they going to test? I mean, are we going to have too many teachers out to teach? There's just a lot of questions in what this is going to look like.
Well, Jim, I think it's going to be all of the above. You know, the unfortunate thing about this, and one of my frustrations, you may recall that I worked closely with a large school district to try to help them get through fall a year ago. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is in too many schools, it's become a binary decision, masks or no masks. And I think that's the wrong way to think about this, because there are many mitigation efforts that a school can make to try to keep schools safe. Obviously, if you employ masks during high disease transmission, that's going to be much safer. But, you know, what I tried to get the school district to understand is, okay, look, if masks are just not going to be feasible, it's politically too difficult, or whatever the issue is, that we're not going to be able to do masks, then let's talk about other things that we can do, because there's a lot of other things. And I could never get the school's interest in working on these other things. And I think what we have to keep in mind is this is not just going to be a problem with COVID. Anytime we have a virus that is transmitted by aerosols, like this one is, it's going to pose a risk. So some of these changes that I was proposing that we could have made to these schools would have made schools safer, not just for COVID, but for other infectious diseases as well. And it was a little boggling to me. Why? Because it's actually in the financial interests of the schools to do it. First of all, they got a lot of money from the federal government that we could have used to invest to make these school buildings safer. The second thing is the school's revenue stream is largely determined by in-person attendance. And so schools make more money if kids are present in school. So why wouldn't you want to try to contain the spread of infection so children can be in school? And frankly, had they followed the advice we were proposing, we could have kept schools open probably for the vast majority of the past 2 years.
And Dr. Pate, we should note that at least in Ada County, we are at a high level of transmission according to the CDC guidelines, which means that masks are recommended indoors because of this high community risk level. We're sending kids back indoors within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah. And, you know, as you said, you know, so many people are just over COVID. You know, they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to think about it. And okay, all I can tell you is that historically, using denial as your strategy has not worked out real well. And because even if you want to say it's not an issue, it's going to be an issue because the virus doesn't care whether you believe in it or believe it can cause problems. And while we certainly, and I'm certainly praying so, won't see serious disease and hospitalizations and deaths like we saw with previous surges, we have to understand that uncontrolled spread is not in our best interest. It will promote the development of more variants, some that could become very problematic again. And also, when you look at hospitals, it's not just a matter of are people filling their beds with COVID, it's how many of their own staff are sick and unable to work. And we're seeing a number of hospitals that already strained from an exodus of healthcare workers leaving the field, now also strained by just having a lot of their own staff infected.
Well, and with that said, Dr. Pate, I mean, let's expand on that, right? That we have seen it hit the airlines and TSA in particular. I believe it was in Los Angeles International Airport. They've had many TSA workers out in recent weeks due to COVID. Southwest Airlines, American Airlines have been hit hard by COVID. And then you, on the other hand, you have travelers upset because we've had so many delays, so many cancellations, and you kind of can't have it both ways.
Well, you know, that you can tell you're a mom, Gemma, because what my mom used to always tell me is, David, you can't always have your cake and eat it too. And exactly. Sometimes if there's something you want, you have to make some sacrifices for it. So you're quite right. We're seeing disruptions in supply chain, disruptions in air travel. We're seeing also, you might have seen, I think it was L.A., where they had a significant outbreak in their TSA staff. And so, you know, I know how much fun going through security checkpoints is when they're fully staffed. Imagine how much more fun when they have reduced staff for screening passengers. So it's just, it's just a matter of when are we going to get to the point where we realize that, you know what, when the disease transmission is high, I'm willing to wear a mask because it kind of keeps everything else going. My kids get to go to school in person. You know, my job doesn't, you know, close down. I can travel. I can do those things versus we're just so determined that there's no way we're going to wear a mask. But OK, well, then we're going to have to deal with the consequences.
And Dr. Payne, can we talk a little bit about that? Because I do think that this is where some people get lost. And you mentioned this, that people, A, want to believe that COVID is over, but B, that there was this idea that, well, if I wear a mask, that means I have to wear it the rest of my life. You know, we're going to be mandated to do this. And yet here we are with some cities and counties looking at potentially reinstating mask mandates because of high spread. And I think it's important that we talk about the fact that it's like this is not something where for the rest of our lives, for all time and eternity, we will need to be masking. It's that whole idea of if you're sick, stay home, right? It's kind of like if the transmission levels are high, wear a mask so we can get those numbers down so we don't have to do that.
Well, Jimmy, you're absolutely right. It really, a lot of this is some pretty common sense stuff that really, it's not like we're saying, you know, what we need is for everybody to protect their communities. Everybody needs to donate a kidney. You know, we're just saying, yeah. Could you wear a mask when the disease transmission is very high? And we know this can work. There's a school in Texas that has not had an outbreak or a case that even originated from school in the last two school years. Why is that? They used all of the collective advice that we've been giving. It's not just one thing. It's just not mask or no mask. It's using all these things. Now, so it can be done. And then the question is, you know, all right, what are people complaining about? They're complaining about mental health for kids. Well, those kids got to stay in school for 2 years. And so they weren't isolated at home and not able to see their friends. What about learning lag? Do you think that the school kids who have been in school shutdowns or hybrid have the most problem with learning, or those that remained in school? And so, again, if we just, you know, if you take the politics out of it, take the emotions out of it, just say, okay, what would be reasonable? Because we would like our kids not to be depressed. We would like our kids to be learning at grade level. We would like the schools to stay open so that we can work. We would like to be able to travel. We would like, you know, and if you begin to start thinking about these things, really, it's pretty petty that we say, oh no, cannot wear a mask. That would be terrible infringement on my freedoms. Well, okay, now you just have these other infringements on your freedoms.
Exactly. Dr. Payne, can we talk about a new study out that talks about long COVID in children? Some good news in the fact that less children, it seems like, are getting long COVID versus adults, but it's still not an insignificant number.
No, and especially when you consider that well over 70% of all children in the United States have been infected, something on that order. Even if it's 10% or 5%, that's a lot of kids. And, you know, I think that's another issue. We were just talking about, people's emotional reactions about the health preventions. A lot of people attribute the learning loss to the isolation and so forth. And you also have to wonder how much of it is due to post-COVID effects on these kids. So I don't know the answer. You're right. Thank God it appears that long COVID in children is less than it is in adults, and substantially so. But you're right. It's not immaterial. And I think the other thing is we always have to take these numbers and projections with a little bit of hesitancy because we still don't have very good case definitions for long COVID. There's other things that happen that it's unclear whether those health effects should be considered long COVID or something all by themselves. So it's not the totality of the story, and those numbers may change with more time, with more reinfections, with more different variants. We just don't know yet. But yes, at least this is some encouraging news.
And then, Dr. Pate, according to the CDC, a majority of people in the United States have had COVID at least once, likely around 70%. However, there are some folks who have yet to get it. People in my own little family fall into that category. What do we know about these people? Because some of it is not necessarily coming down just to behaviors, I guess. But also, health officials are warning that it's like, well, you know, your luck could be running out with this variant.
Yeah. So we don't know a lot, but here's some of what we know. First of all, you know, I still think, and I think most experts agree, whether you've been infected with COVID or not has a lot more to do with your behaviors and your risk mm-hmm. factors than it does your genetics. With that said, we have identified a lot of different genetic abnormalities that most people are completely unaware of. So this is not something you're going to be able to just run to your doctor and say, hey, look, do I have this genetic problem or benefit? Either way, because it can work both ways. We have seen that there, for example, we've known for a long time that people with different blood types seem to be at different risks. And I don't think that the leading theories are that it's exactly your blood type that's determining it, but probably some genetic factor that's in close relationship for what does code your blood type on your chromosome. So that certainly may be evidence that some people do get a benefit. On the other hand, we know that there are genetic abnormalities people are completely unaware of that cause them to have severe disease when they get infected. Unfortunately, one of the saddest stories is I've been trying to help a woman who has 8 children in the age range between 30 and 50. And over the past 2 years, all 8 of them have died from COVID. And it's just horribly, horribly tragic. But that is a case where, and it's, they were different times during the pandemic, different variants involved. And that's a case where I'm highly suspicious there's some kind of genetic factor that aggravated the disease and all of those. So we're looking to see if we can learn more about that to help like grandchildren and that kind of thing. But yes, there are genetic factors. We very poorly understand them so far.
Okay. Dr. Pate, Lisa from Boise wrote in. It's kind of long. She has a couple of questions. So let me set the scene for you. Lisa works for a very small company, 6 employees. One of her coworkers was exposed to COVID late last week, started feeling ill Saturday. He tested positive Sunday. He will be coming back to work on Friday, just in time for a company outing, lunch, and an escape room. So Lisa says, my coworker's wife will also be attending. She developed COVID symptoms late last week. Here are my questions. I'm in my 40s, vaccinated and boosted. I've never tested positive for COVID. So how concerned should I be about eating lunch outside at a table with them, but also being in an enclosed space with them as the escape room would be?
Yeah. So of the two activities, obviously being indoors is going to be the highest risk. My daughter has talked about taking me to one of these escape rooms, but I've never been to one. And so I don't know how good their air handling is. My guess is it's not going to be very efficient. So I'd certainly have more concern about being indoors. Just for the general listeners, that doesn't mean you can't be infected outdoors, but outdoors, the real risk is when people are packed very close together, especially things like concerts, rallies, where people are going to be yelling or singing, those kinds of things. Those were going to be the highest risk outdoor kinds of things. So what you have here is Lisa has a couple of people in her social network here, I guess a coworker, I don't remember the other one, but that are infected. First of all, that's just a sign of the times. And that is that we are in a surge. And so everybody is going to be aware of more people that are infected. That also means mm-hmm. that your chance, if you're indoors with a random group of people, you know, higher percentage of somebody's going to be infectious. And so then the question is about, you know, how about those people that I guess it's going to be just under a week. And then some people that have had COVID are going to be back in circulation with these folks, if you will. We have some recent data that shows that with Omicron, which is what we're dealing with now, 50% of people will still be infectious at 5 days. And about 25% of people will be infectious as long as 10 days. So it's hard to know which group these folks are going to fit in. But I think the presumption should be made that they still could be infectious and therefore either shouldn't attend or, you know, everybody should be aware that, they just because they recently were infected, they may not be safe to be around. So keep your distance, use good fitting masks, et cetera.
And then Lisa has one other question, Dr. Pate, and I think a lot of people may be wondering this. She says, am I being too concerned about my COVID exposure in the workplace? Well, I just need to learn to accept that people will be coming in with active COVID infections. So should I stop requesting that CDC guidelines be followed?
So, yes, Lisa should assume that she is going to continue to have exposures, especially during periods of surges. And I'm not sure exactly what kind of work she's doing, but sounds like she interacts with the public or customers or something like that. Right. So yes, Lisa is going to need to assume that there will be ongoing threats to her relative to that. Now, with that said, I think there's a very dangerous narrative that a lot of people are promoting, and that is that, well, it's just a matter of time. You're invariably going to get infected, so, you know, why bother? I think that is incorrect. So most of the people in my network that have been asking for my advice and following it, including myself, we haven't been infected yet, and I'm knocking on wood. Now, sometimes despite your best efforts, you're going to get infected. However, if you can delay that infection, the longer you can delay it, the better. And the least number of reinfections you get, the better for your health. We do know that for sure. So keep up the efforts, but understand you are going to be subject to ongoing threats of exposure.
Pat wrote in saying, I have COVID right now, but I don't have my second booster yet. So when should I get it?
Okay. So did she say how old she was?
She didn't. That was the only information I have. They have COVID right now, but they just don't have that second booster.
Okay. So she has COVID right now. So, you know, we used to give the advice before we had more good data that you should wait 90 days after infection to get your either vaccinated or your booster. That is no longer the consensus of opinion. And a lot of that was because there was a false notion that your quote unquote natural immunity would last that long, when in fact we find that the majority of reinfections, it looks like, take place within 2 months from the original infection. So what our current advice is recover from your infection. And then when you are past the symptoms, you're feeling fine, go get vaccinated, or in this case, get your booster.
And Rick wrote in, Dr. Pate, he says, I'm 70, otherwise healthy, I'm vaccinated, I'm boosted twice, I'm lying in bed with COVID for the very first time. So who do I point the finger at? Is it the people who did not get vaccinated in the first place? And I wanted to bring this up, Dr. Pate, with just the 2 minutes we have left, because, you know, vaccines are working, but people are getting infected. So do we place all the blame at the hands of the unvaccinated?
Yeah. And you know, as an illustration I used before, if there's a gunfight going on out in front of my house, I'm not going to go get in the middle of it just because I have a bulletproof vest. If I have to get in the middle of it, would I rather have a bulletproof vest than not? Yes. But the same thing for these vaccinations. They can only do so much. And so if what we do know is if people are vaccinated, they are five times less likely to get infected than if they're not. So chances are, yes, it probably was somebody not vaccinated, but it's because of such high levels of transmission right now. Unfortunately, it's probably impossible to determine where he actually got infected.
Mm-hmm. And from there, just still, I think, knowing that, to clarify for folks, that vaccines are working, even though
yes,
we are seeing infection rates higher.
Yes. And in fact, the great benefit for him is that the fact that he is fully vaccinated and boosted means he has a 14 times less chance of dying from this infection that he has. He has about a 7.5-fold less chance of ending up in the hospital. So those are well worth getting vaccinated. Unfortunately, it only dropped his chances of getting an infection by about 5-fold. And so when you have this much disease activity with a very contagious strain, it is still possible to get infected. But the good news for him, for President Biden, for a lot of others that have gotten these mm-hmm. infections, despite older age, they've been safe from being hospitalized or severely ill or dying.
All right. Dr. Pate, as always, so appreciative of you coming on the program and talking with us about this and where we are right now. Always appreciate your time and your expertise.
My pleasure. Thanks, Gemma.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Dr. David Pate. He is, of course, the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have questions for Dr. Pate about COVID-19, please get them into us. Email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu.